This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill, a political and economic union of 27 countries with a unique single market to power growth. The European Union is a global superpower. But with that comes complexity and the challenge of achieving consensus. So today we have His Excellency Michalis Rokas, the newly appointed ambassador of the European Union, to discuss trade and ties with Malaysia in a world disrupted by a pandemic and the rise of populism. Now, let's start with the recent headlines over trade. Now, the competition for foreign direct investment, I think, is intense as all countries attempt to rebuild their economies and reduce, of course, the scar tissue caused by the pandemic. But I want to know, what is your assessment in terms of ease of doing business here in this country?
First of all, good morning and thank you for having me for your program. Well, we are a traditional friend and of Malaysia, and we have been investing heavily in this country. We account for almost 20% of your foreign direct investment, some 150 billion ringgit, which is quite significant. And we have been there since hundreds of years. Some companies that have been established maybe 120 years ago. So there is no doubt that our investment relations are very solid and sound. Talking about the business environment, we have to understand that we are operating under COVID and all the restrictions that came along. So it is true that in last year, because of COVID, we had some estimates from our European chamber and individual chambers, not only European, but others, that they register a decreasing attractiveness and maybe friendliness of investment. But that, to me, it is, first of all, because of various decisions, the SOPs, the MCOs about COVID, which are understandable, okay? And on the other hand, some regulations, that they are not perceived as foreign investor friendly, and they were taken without proper or long time consultation. And I can recall restrictions to recruitment of foreigners, market access for certain products such as halal meat, alcoholic beverages, but also in the area of procurement and other services. It is a tendency, a trend. I don't see that this is a given, and I am pretty sure that the business environment remains very attractive because of language and the very good infrastructure that Malaysia has to offer.
So, yes, you did highlight something, which is this, suggestions by some of your members of the EU Malaysia Chamber of Commerce and Industry. They voiced, one of your members in particular, voiced his frustration with regards to the recent challenges brought on by the pandemic. And he highlights that the ease of doing business in Malaysia has declined. And in that part, there was not much discussion with the different ministries. Have you had any discussions since then? Is the Malaysian government open to some of the suggestions you just mentioned in terms of making Malaysia a more attractive destination for FDI then?
I didn't have the chance yet because of the MCO. I didn't manage to meet any ministers.
And even through Zoom? I mean, nowadays everybody meets through some either...
It is true, but I think a first contact, because I arrived recently in the country, is better to be done face-to-face. And here I'm registering just a tendency, or even if I read what the World Bank has to say, it also noted that Malaysia should reform its investment promotion systems and schemes. So it is a tendency, but I'm not saying it is a fact. So I will be having, hopefully, this meeting soon. And I think it is not the opinion of chambers, because these are independent private organizations. They know best. But I think what is important is that for us, Malaysia, it is an important partner. And in that regard, we have invested massively in this country. And of course, we are looking of how this partnership can be consolidated and further enhanced, because the fundamentals of the Malaysian economy are very solid. And that's why, even in the absence of a free trade agreement, we continue to be present and to continue to be happy and operating and doing business in Malaysia.
And since you mentioned the free trade agreement, yes, I need to highlight that, you know, talks have been going on since 2010, and now we are in 2021 and still no agreement. Is it a priority of yours during your time here to get one signed?
A country like Malaysia in ASEAN, with its growth and its economic fundamentals, that they are very stark, it is, of course, a priority for the EU. That said, you know that the EU negotiates very comprehensive FTAs. And in order to do this, we have to be assured of the level of ambition. So it is not only a free trade about goods, but it has to go well beyond services and beyond the border, as we say, issues. So to try to remove as many barriers in trade as we can. So it is, it remains in our radar screen. I will be engaging with the ministry or MITI, and hopefully we will see, we will perhaps need now to reassess, because now I feel that there is again a warmth in our relationship and opening, because also we have managed to manage the irritant of the palm oil, and I can talk about it in a moment. So I think it is a moment where we need to reflect. We do the proper scoping. In the EU also, we are expecting any day now to have trade policy review that is going to be announced. And we see in this framework of ASEAN and as an individual country, how we can come back to the negotiating table, providing that the level of ambition is there.
One area which I think is the main stumbling block, palm oil. Especially since Malaysia, we initiated a WTO case against the EU over discriminatory palm oil practices. How big an issue is this in the European Union?
Well, let me first comment on what you said about the WTO case. We are very happy about it because we are true believers in multilateralism. We are staunch supporters of the WTO and its mechanism. And I think all disputes should be directed there for a solution. I think already we have consultations with Malaysia in Geneva. It will be in the next 2 weeks, and then we will decide how we will take it from there. So I'm very happy, and the EU is very happy, that we will be able to address this issue through the WTO mechanism. But let me come to the other issue. I believe there was a lot of misunderstanding and misconceptions about this issue. And I want to be very straightforward on this issue. There has never been a ban on palm oil whatsoever. Not before, not now. What it is happening, it is that, of course, we know we have consumer feelings, we have NGOs that they care about deforestation, impacts of deforestation and all that. And there are some in Europe that and they have the right to say that their products, they don't contain palm oil and something like that. This is normal. This is how NGOs and their freedom allows them to do. But there has never been a palm oil. So I am very pleased also to announce that we managed to overcome this difficulty last year, the end of last year. This allowed also the elevation of the EU-ASEAN partnership to a strategic one by establishing a joint working group in the framework of ASEAN to discuss not only palm oil, but the vegetable oils and their sustainability in general. And I have to say one word, sustainability.
So I want to be clear, there is at this juncture no ban on palm oil into EU or plans to ban it in the future. Am I correct?
Clear.
But I do understand that there is a ban in terms of palm oil being used as a biodiesel by 2030.
It is not a ban. And this is what is the so-called Renewable Energy Directive, which targets biofuels that they have important impact on deforestation. And there, again, it is an issue of sustainability. But I have to say that there it is going to be an open consultation because this review will be done by mid of this year. And we invite Malaysia and Indonesia to bring in their comments and their suggestions and their recommendations. But also, I will go well beyond that. We are working as we speak with Malaysia, and we have conceived a program, which we call it CAMI, but it is on the sustainability of certifications of palm oil in Malaysia, to assist. So we want to offer policy dialogue and technical assistance to Malaysia. This is a project that will start now. We are still in consultation with the Ministry of Primary Industries and Commodities, and we will try to assist Malaysia so as it is palm oil becomes sustainable. If it is sustainable, there's no problem.
Do you have the same approach when it comes to soybeans or even beef coming out of Brazil? Because apparently up to one-fifth of all that is imported into Europe comes from illegally deforested Amazon forests. So some people will say, you know, is that a bit of hypocrisy or the power of lobbyists in the EU then?
True. We have to fight, I think, I would say, misconceptions. Because I have to tell you very clearly that in all areas and in all our international relations, we want to bring the sustainability in our future. Our future, it is going to be either greener or very difficult. And I think there is where science, and I, as you ambassador, but I think the grand majority of people in Europe, they believe in it. So believe me that there is an increased sensitivity on all areas, whether it is soya bean, whether it is the Amazon, all around the world. And I think it is something to expect. The European Union, it is an important economic power, but also it is a niche market, and it is consumers, they have sensitivities. So I think our trading partners, they have to understand that, and we need to adapt and be fair. But again, all this, what you just mentioned, this misconception, we have to sit down in order to be able to address them. And that working group allows us to do, because until recently, until the end of last year, we had the irritant, but we were not talking to each other. So it is high time, and this makes also my work here and my tenure very, I'm looking very much forward to it, because we will be sitting now down and we will try to remove all misconceptions in our relationship and address scientifically all arguments and have a say on all these matters.
On the Breakfast Grill, in the hot seat this morning, is His Excellency Michalis Rokas, Ambassador of the EU to Malaysia. When we come back, is the EU pursuing vaccine multilateralism or nationalism? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. This morning, we are speaking to His Excellency Michalis Rokas, Ambassador of the EU to Malaysia. A moment ago, we were asking, why isn't there a free trade agreement? Now, I want to ask about vaccines, because I just mentioned it ago, and we really need to discuss this, because recently, Your Excellency was reported in the local press that the export of COVID-19 vaccines to third countries, including Malaysia, under the existing advanced purchase agreements will be safeguarded to the largest extent feasible after the recent announcement on export controls by the EU, which were manufactured in the EU. But in the first place, why the need for these controls? Doesn't it sound like vaccine nationalism?
I would disagree. I think we all understand that we are under national emergency because of the health situation and COVID. So, unfortunately, and I have to say that although the European Union is very proud, it has invested massively that we have vaccines, first of all, because we put a lot of billions of euros into the scientific research and vaccines that normally take 5 to 10 years. They took 10 months. This is impressive, but also in distribution and plants and be able to assimilate everywhere in the world. Also, we are behind the COVAX facility, which intends really to bring the vaccines freely and without any impediments to the most vulnerable around the world. So we believe that we have done our parts on the COVID-19, but we saw that unfortunately there were some alleged problems of reselling, litigation, trafficking, and companies not all honoring their commitments with the EU. So we decided to do this measure, which is by, and as I said in my statement, by no means a ban. It is an export transparency and authorization mechanism in order so that the companies, those famous advanced purchase agreements, they honor them, but not only honor them for the EU, but for everybody. So with this mechanism, because a lot of these vaccines are made in the EU, they are produced in the EU, the components are finalized in the EU, and they are exported around the world, and we are very proud and happy about it. We have to safeguard that those agreements by the EU, but also with other nations, and I stipulated that in my statement, are honored and safeguarded. And I'm also very happy that until today, as we speak, the EU has authorized all the exports requested by other countries, including Malaysia.
So this is not in response to the fact that the EU is rather slow off the bat when it comes to vaccinating their own citizens compared to the likes of, let's say, the UK.
I don't want to get into a discussion of competition, because we all know, and I think this is the world motto, nobody's safe until everybody's safe. So we know, of course, that there have been the tensions of Brexit, and people, they have this tendency to compare. It is true that we are lagging a little bit behind. The EU decided to take prudence and safety first. So we have an authorization agency, a certification agency, the European Medicine Agency, that took all the precautions and didn't use the emergency measures for authorizing those vaccines. And this because you know that there is a lot of misinformation and disinformation about the subject, anti-vaxxers around the world. So we wanted to make sure that this safety is first. So I think now we are speeding up. We are speeding up. We are assisting companies to deliver on their pledges, and hopefully it's going to be addressed. But definitely it is an ongoing process, lessons learned, but I am confident that by summer, as it is said, by the end of summer, 70% of the EU population will be inoculated.
And now we shouldn't let you go without spending some time on the core objectives of the EU, working to foster stability, security, prosperity, democracy, fundamental freedoms, and the rule of law at an international level. Now, what would you say your priorities are in terms of ensuring these goals, especially in Malaysia, a country which has seen a change of government without election and then subsequently imposing a state of emergency, pausing parliament till the pandemic is brought under control? What do you make of this?
Well, we are in extraordinary times, and I think we have to see everything that is happening under the prism of COVID. I'm a newcomer to Malaysia. I understand also that the 2018 election was, how should I call it, maybe a watershed in Malaysian history, a lot of changes. And I'm learning by the day. And I have to say it is fascinating to see how the political environment is shaping up by the day. So, of course, suspending parliament, it is not something that we want to see it happening for a long time. Of course, we hope that this emergency, which seems to be according to the Constitution, will end up soon. We are also keen to see this advisory committee to the AGONG, how it works. But as I said, we have to see it under this prism, and we have to say that all the checks and balances, and there is not erosion of the rights and freedoms of all Malaysians. As EU, I have to say that we come up with a message of partnership, a strong partnership. We have been for a long time, but now it is time in shaping and rethinking the post-COVID world, how we can enhance our partners around the world. Because as it proved, this situation, without these partnerships with countries that they have similar understanding, they are democracies, we cannot go ahead. So values, they will be there. They are always there. It is the fundamental, it is our DNA, as we say, to use a medical term. But we have to find ways on passing the messages, not showing that we are lecturing, that we are understanding, and then assisting through our policy dialogues, our technical assistance for also Malaysia to address the issues where a lot of people believe that a lot of improvement can be done.
And have you had a chance to pass on these messages with the Perikatan government on any of these things that we've just discussed, so be it rule of law or democracy?
Well, as I said, I presented only credentials end of last year, and then MCO came in. And I truly believe that you said about Zoom, and I'm not going to ask about tell about security, but this kind of partnership, because I'm going to stay hopefully 4 years here, they are done by gaining trust and showing to your interlocutors and to your ministers what you mean and how you can assist and how you then to do and how we can create partnerships. I will have, and I hope to align post-MCO meetings with all key ministers and with the government. And of course, I'm going to meet all walks of life, travel around the country, and make these persistent messages everywhere, including to the opposition.
And another project that the EU is funding is strengthening Malaysia's media for change. Journalists and media organisations will be supported to take a strategic role in promoting and advancing a strong, independent and diverse media in Malaysia. I want to know, where are we falling short of this here?
Again, I don't want to say where we're falling short, because we know very well how it is difficult in a multiracial and vibrant society to talk about all issues freely without prejudice, and how to open doors and not shut them down. So our programs in this area, what they aim, it is first of all of how to help journalists understand what are the best practices, how to do the best exchanges, how to convince editors, how to reach out, how to be able to use social media in a way that it is constructive and it opens doors. So I think we have targeted, and also in the media freedom is not the only, because we have also social fields for social change that we finance. We have about the community voices through Internews. It is strengthening local media's capacity and promoting governance, transparency. So we have to find first messages that every Malaysian needs and understands and helps. And then step by step, going to the more sensitive and more delicate issues in order to create an inclusive society. And myself and also my colleagues, the EU ambassadors, we are 16 here, we are very, very much willing to engage with the journalists in order to create a true plural society, and also another area, combat disinformation and misinformation. Because that is what we are facing now, especially with COVID and all the conspiracy theories, as we see, and the anti-vax and not believing in science anymore and be very skeptical. So there are tremendous areas where we are developing means in the EU. And I think those projects allow us to exchange the latest and the best knowledge that we have developed in the EU in order to preserve the fundamental freedom of expression.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was His Excellency Michalis Rokas, Ambassador of the EU to Malaysia. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.